Okay, Rabotai. We have to wish everyone Shavuot Tov. So we're studying here in Agadita, in Masechtas Sanhedrin, that goes on. And sometimes when you learn Agadita, you get this empty feeling that, you know, you're just reading and translating and nothing more. So I was looking around to see if we can get some more in-depth analysis of this Agadita.
Rob?
Yeah?
Why is it Agadita? I mean, it is law, so why is it Agadita?
Well, most of it is about, you know, the punishment that will be incurred if we appoint a judge who's not worthy, or, for example, how to scare the judges to make sure that they understand the severity of what they're getting into. We're also discussing whether or not we can advocate in favor of Pshara. Do we not advocate? Does the Torah want Pshara? Does the Torah rather want Din? We had a machlokas here between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yossi, who's absolutely opposed to Pshara. We had Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcho, who says that the Torah wants us to do a Pshara. Then we had a whole vast array of Shitos in the middle. I thought it would be kedai to spend a little time and get maybe a little bit more of an insight into what's going on here. So I found in Gvuras Yitzchak, which I mentioned on numerous occasions to you, Rabbi Yitzchak Sirotskin, that he actually takes the bull by the horns and he goes through this Gemara with a fine-tooth comb, actually analyzing almost every line in the Gemara. So I don't know how much time we'll have, because I'm always trying to juggle the time that we have between hespek, as we say, you know, moving on and trying to understand what we're learning. But we'll see how it goes. So this is an experiment of sorts. So let's take a look back on Daf Vav Amud Beis. We had that long brisa, and we ended that brisa with Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, and he was in favor of Pshara. And if you recall, Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha has a concept called Mishpat Sheyesh Bo Tzedaka, or Mishpat Sheyesh Bo Shalom. In other words, you combine Din and Shalom, or Din and Tzedaka. So for example, you'll see the Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha quotes a pasuk in Zechariah HaNavi. And Zechariah says, Emes u'mishpat, which sounds like strict din. And then it says Shalom, which sounds like we're motivated to make harmony amongst the litigants. Shiftu b'sha'areichem, you should judge in your gates. And Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha asks the obvious question, how can you call it Emes u'mishpat on the one hand, and in the same breath you call it Shalom? Hello, b'makom sheyesh mishpat ain shalom, b'makom sheyesh shalom ain mishpat. It's either din, and if we do din, that's called, remember, yikov ha-din is ahar, and then we're going to engender a certain kind of friction between the litigants. You know, one litigant thinks he's paying him $1,000 for naught, and the other litigant thinks that if the din is not with him, you know, he's been cheated out of $1,000. Then he has another. So what does he derive from this? So Rabbi Shu ben Karcha, in order to somehow reconcile Mishpat and Shalom in the same breath in Zechariah Novi, he says there's something called a Mishpat Sheyesh Bo Shalom, and that's called Pshara or Bitzua. V'chein. Now he quotes another pasuk. This is in Sefer Shmuel regarding David HaMelech. Vayhi David Oseh Mishpat Utzdaka. Once again, Mishpat means law. According to the strict letter of the law, tzedakah means to somehow give something to someone that he really doesn't deserve, and that makes sense within the framework, within the context of a compromise. So the Gemara concludes in explaining Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha's second drasha, Ezu mishpat sheyesh bo tzedakah, v'yomer zeh bitzua, that when you make this mediation, this arbitration, then it's called a mishpat sheyesh bo tzedakah. Okay, so that's the Gemara here on Daf Vav Amud Beis. Now this Chazara that we did, in which we saw these two Yalfuses of Rabbi Shuben Karcha, the conclusion of which we advocate some sort of an integration of both Mishpat and Tzedakah, or Mishpat and Shalom, this has to be understood in the light of a Gemara back on Daf Vav Amud Aleph. So we're really doing a nice Chazara over here. And the Gemara here has on Daf Vav Amid Aleph a discussion about what's called Makshinon, which means a hekesh, an equation between Pshara and Din. And how is this to be understood? So the Gemara wants to know how many judges you need for a Pshara. And the Gemara quotes a brisa that records a machlokas between Rabbi Meir and Chachamim. According to Rabbi Meir, just like Din requires a minimum of 3 judges, so too Pshara requires a minimum of 3 judges. Chachamim say no. Pshara is different than Din. Pshara only requires 1 judge. And the Gemara thinks that the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim is about the following issue. What is the law in the case of Din? Does Din itself absolutely require 3 judges? And again, just to review, you know, to stimulate your memory here, we had a very fundamental machlokas called the Erev Parashios Ksiv. We weren't sure if the Torah always requires in Dini Mominus 3 judges, and that's Elohim times 3, or no, that's only Xelos v'chavolos, but as far as Dini Mominus, like Hodos v'alvos is concerned, 1 judge would suffice. So the Gemara postulates the following. To Kuli Alma, both Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim agree, Makshinon Pshara L'din. You'll see that about 10 lines up from the bottom of page Vav Amid Aleph. Makshinon Pshara L'din. There's a hekesh between Pshara and Din. The only machlokas is, well, what's the law in Din? In other words, the paradigm now for Pshara is going to be Din. And if we know how many judges we need in Din, hence we're going to know how many judges we need in Pshara. Everybody agrees, both Chachamim and Rabbi Meir, that there's an equation between Pshara and Din. The machlokas is going to be a fundamental machlokas about Din, not about Pshara. I mean, the spin-off is going to be Pshara. Does Din require Shlosha, which means Erev Parshios Ksiv, that's the Sheet of Rava, we had in the Sheet of Rabbi Avo, that means that the Torah says Elohim 3 times, not only in Xelos, but also in Dini Mominos, in Hodos Valvos. What do we say? No. Erev Parshios Ein Ksiv Kan. And when the Torah requires Elohim times 3, that's only in what? That's only in Xelos V'chavos, but doesn't apply to Hodos Valvos. Now, the Gemara says, Kuli Alma, everybody agrees, Makshina and Pshara Lidin. Where is that hekesh between Pshara and Din? Where does it find itself? Where does the Torah, or at least the Tanakh, equate Pshara and Din? So if you'll take a look at Rashi, which is about 2/3 of the way down the page on Daf Vav Amid Aleph, you'll see a Tosus on the left side called Bitsuaf that helps you if you draw a straight line. You'll more or less find Rashi that says Makshinon a little bit below than that. Makshinon Pshara Lidin. So Rashi invokes the Pasuk in Shmuel Beis. Now this Pasuk in Shmuel should not be foreign to us. Mishpat Utstaka. That was the source for Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. Because David HaMelech, the Pasuk testifies, did Mishpat Utsdaka, and that was the basis, according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, for the mitzvah of Pshara. So we see that the word Tzdaka in the Pasuk by David HaMelech of Mishpat Utsdaka is a reference to Pshara. And yet, in the same Pasuk, it says Mishpat, which means did. So we have 2 words that are contiguous. And that creates a hekesh. One word is mishpat, which means din. The other word is tzedakah, which means pshara. Hence, makshinon, pshara l'din. And therefore, Rabbi Meir is going to conclude that just like din, l'shitaso, he holds that you require 3 judges, so too, pshara requires 3 judges. What we want to take a look at is Tosfos. Do you see on the left column, while it's still thin, the last Tosfos on the left, before you get to the wide lines, is a Tosis Dibra Maskil Makshinon Pshara L'din. No laptop today?
No. I didn't want to carry it.
It's too heavy for you. All right. you know, we'll find a place that we can lock up your laptop, you know, so no one will steal it. You know, it's like with the bicycles here.
No,
now they have bicycles that cost more than a car. They have these, now I'm exaggerating, but they're very expensive bicycles. So anyway, there's a Tosis here on the left. Okay, if you can look on, that's good. Called Makshinon Psharaladin. Pirishka Bekuntris. Mirechsiv, Ahi David Ose Mishpat Utstaka. So we see that according to Rashi, the source for this Hekesh is the Pasuk by David HaMelech. Now, how does Rashi know that this Pasuk by David is referring to Pshara? That's the Gemara that we started with on Daf Vav Amid Beis, that Rabbi Shu ben Karcha uses this Pasuk to prove that the Torah advocates a Mishpat Sheyesh Bo Tzedakah, which is Pshara. So we see that this Pasuk of Tzedakah refers to what? Everybody, help me out here. That tzedakah refers to pshara. Oh, so tzedakah refers to pshara, and in the same pasuk it says mishpat, which is din. Hence, we have a hekesh between what mishpat and pshara, between din and pshara. That's Rashi. And again, you know, when I learn this Rashi, I'm very satisfied with this Rashi. I don't have any objections to this Rashi. But Tosis is not happy with this Rashi. And Tosis says v'tema. Tosis is bothered by a certain kasha here. We're not sure exactly what bothers Tosis. Let's see if we can figure this out. Tosis says, "Tanya lekamon kishem shadin b'shlosha kach hapshara b'shlosha mashma demakish pshara." Now here you have to take a look in the Hagos Habach ledin. There's a word left out of this Tosis. Mashma demakish pshara ledin. Now, Tosis has the following objection. According to the Tana, this is not Rabbi Yishu ben Karcha, who says that that Pshara is optional. It's you know, we have license for Pshara, but it's not required. Then we have a requirement of three judges for Pshara, and that's based on a hekesh between Pshara and Din. Now, Rashi invokes the Pasuk in Shmuel, and how does Rashi know that the Pasuk in Shmuel sets up this hekesh? Because Rabbi Shmuel ben Karcha proves from that Pasuk that it's a mitzvah to do a Pshara. Says Tosfos, Rabbi Shmuel ben Karcha Savar, mitzvah, alma lo darish, tanakama, mishparut stakal inyan bitsua. Again, the Tanakhama, who has this equation between Pshara and Din, does not accept Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha. The Tanakhama, who accepts the Hekesh between Pshara and Din, holds that although you're allowed to do a Pshara, but it's certainly not a mitzvah to do a Pshara. Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha is the one who is Mechadish a mitzvah of Pshara. And Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha derives it from this Pasuk. Obviously, the Tanakhama is not using this Pasuk. If the Tanakhama had used this Pasuk for his equation between Mishpat and Staka, namely between Din and Pshara, then he would have come to the conclusion of Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha that if this was what David HaMelech would recommend, what's the word we should use? David HaMelech would implore the Dayanim to do a Pshara. Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha derives that from the Pasuk of Mishpat and Staka. Well, you can't use that pasuk for a hekesh because the hekesh of Pshara and Din, from which you derive the requirement of three judges in Pshara, is derived according to the Chachamim from a hekesh, but they don't come up with the conclusion that Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha came up with, namely that the Torah advocates in favor of Pshara. Alma, we see from this, lo darish tanakama mishpat utzdaka le'inyan bitsua. They didn't understand this pasuk as referring, this pasuk in Shmuel and David HaMelech referring to the word staka refers to mitzvah, because if they did so, then they would have come to the same conclusion as Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha, namely that the Torah advocates in favor of pshara, and pshara becomes a mitzvah. Umehikra nami, and if you'll tell me, well, maybe the hekesh is based on the pasuk in Zechariah of Emes umishpat v'shalom. He is still going to be stuck with the same question, because if the word shalom in that pasuk in Zechariah is a reference to pshara, then the chachamim, if they're using this pasuk as the Hekesh, the source of the Hekesh, and derive three judges, then they should have also likewise come to the same conclusions. Rabbi Shu ben Karcha, remember Rabbi Shu ben Karcha invoked two psukim, and both psukim led him to the same conclusion that it's a mitzvah lasos pshara. So basically what the Tosfos says is, we're really in a bind here. We know that the Chachamim have what's called a Hekesh between Pshara and Din. We know that the Chachamim derive from this Hekesh that just like in Din you require three judges, nothing less will do, so to Pshara you require three judges. We also know that the Chachamim hold that Pshara is an option, but it's optional. Kishmo Kenu, it's only an option. It's not what? A mitzvah. Who holds it's a mitzvah? That's Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha. Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha proved that it was a mitzvah from one of two sources, both of which had, according to Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha's understanding, an allusion, a reference to pshara, either in the pasuk in Zechariah where it says shalom, or in the pasuk in Tehil in Shmuel where the Torah calls it tztaka. Whatever it is, the word shalom in Zechariah, the word tztaka in Shmuel means mishpah, means pshara, correct? Now, if we can accept that interpretation of either of the two psukim, or both those two psukim, then we're going to come to the conclusion that the Torah has an entity called mishpat sheyeshba shel shalom, or mishpat sheyeshba staka, which means pshara, and therefore we're going to conclude that it's a mitzvah to have a pshara. So how could it be that the Chachamim, who never went as far as Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha, they never accepted his position that there's a mitzvah to do pshara, that they would base themselves on a hekesh in those very same psukim, which set up pshara as the lechatchila, meaning as the mitzvah, and that's the way to go. Does everybody have it? Again, I'll say it one more time because I'm looking here at a little bit of blank stares here. Well, let's just go one off. There's a machlokas between Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha and the Chachamim about pshara. Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha says that the Torah advocates in favor of pshara that's called mitzvah, and that's the way to go. You know, the litigants come into Beis Din, they want a din. No. We have to wash their brains and convince them they should do a pshara. And then it's the Chachamim Shita. The Chachamim rejected Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha, although they allow you to do a pshara, and the Dayanim are okay if they do so, but that's not certainly a mitzvah. That's not something that we should advocate. Now, we know that the Chachamim, I leave out Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha for a minute, have what's called a hekesh between pshara and din, and they derive from that hekesh that just like din requires three judges, pshara requires three judges. And we're trying to figure out where in the Tanakh do we have this hekesh between pshar and din. Rashi invokes the pasuk by David HaMel. Well, that doesn't make any sense because it was Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha who invokes the pasuk of tztaka as referring to pshara. And that was his unique shita because he held that there was a mitzvah lasos pshara. But the Chachamim cannot be, you can't attribute that interpretation of the pasuk in David HaMel to the Chachamim, because if you do so, then you're really stuck, because the Chachamim hold that you're allowed, it's a heter to do pshara, but it's not a mitzvah. So we have to come up with another source for a hekesh between pshara and din. What is that source according to Tosfos? It can't be Rashi, because then we're stuck with a contradiction in the Chachamim. They have this hekesh and yet they don't accept Rabbi Yishuv ben Karcha's mitzvah. So what pasuk can we have? There's no answer to that question. Tosfos does not find a pasuk. He leaves it as an unanswered question. Okay. Now, Rabos, I'd like to learn with you a piece of the Gvuras Yitzchak, because I think he really sheds a light on this whole sugi. You see, what I enjoy is when you take a sugi that's dry bones, I call it, and you breathe life into it. Because this sugi with Rashi and the Hekesh, it's all very mechanical, very technical. He says the following. Vahanire, you'll see this as the second paragraph on page Ayin Zayin, on the right column. He wants to understand Rashi Shita. Yesh la'ayin. So you might want to underline the words yesh la'ayin. Yesh la'ayin is the same as yesh lachkar. In other words, when I want to offer two possible definitions, then I open it up by either yesh la'ayin or yesh lachkar. Sometimes you'll see yesh lehistapek. Those are the code words. Now, you want to underline the next word im, because that's going to give you the first tzad, the first definition. And then if you fast forward to the third line, you'll see the word o. And if you want to underline the word o, these are just games that I play with myself to make it easier for my eye to see in every hakira what are the two tzadim. So he says the following. The first tzad is the following. Bitzua, yesh Allah toras mishpat. That bitzua, otherwise known as pshar, can be classified or defined as mishpat. There are two types of mishpat, but you have this general, heading, which is called mishpat, and now you have two subcategories. Mishpat branches, it breaks down, bifurcates, so to speak, into two subcategories. It's like an av with two toldos. And what are these two possibilities? There's a mishpat shel din, and then there's a mishpat shel shalom, or shel tztaka. And that's going to mean that bitzua, otherwise known as pshar, is mishpat. Because we've classified bitzua under the definition of mishpat. And there are two forms or two modes of mishpat. There's a mode of mishpat which is called pshar, and there's a mode of mishpat which is mishpat, or din. Oh, here's the second possibility. Shebitzua ain't Allah Torah's mishpat klal. Bitzua is not mishpat. On the contrary, bitzua undermines mishpat. It irritates mishpat, because instead of mishpat, we're going to come up with a pshara. So let's say instead of Reuven collecting 1,000, he's only going to collect 500. Or instead of Shimon being potter below klum and he doesn't pay anything, he's going to pay 500. That undermines, that irritates mishpat. So we have to say, according to that second definition, that mishpat equals mishpat and din is mishpat, and bitzua or pshara is a new category unto itself. Yesh Torah's Bitzua. So a new Torah, so to speak, a new super category. So we're not talking about one Av with two Toldos, but we're talking about two different Avos. Does everybody hear the Chakira? I mean, this Chakira, by the way, has very profound, almost philosophical meaning to it, because you really don't know whether or not the Torah recognizes Pshara as a Mishpat. Maybe Pshara is a way of circumventing mishpat, but it's not mishpat. It irritates mishpat. Or no, maybe the Torah actually recognizes and validates pshara as mishpat. V'hinei, Rav Yishuv ben Karcha shesomer mitzvah l'vitzora, darish lahachkra, ezu mishpat sheyesh ba shalom. Look at the language of Rav Yishuv ben Karcha. He says, what is a mishpat that has shalom? Heviomer bitzua. It means that he calls bitzua mishpat. He must accept that first tzad in this hakira, that mishpat subdivides into two subcategories, one of which is called pshara. Utre gavni mishpat ikah. There are two forms or modes of mishpat. Yesh mishpat shel din, v'yesh mishpat shel shalom. Or if we take the drasha not from Zechariah but from Shmuel, then yesh mishpat sheyesh bat staka, v'yesh mishpat sheu din without staka. Ulefi Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Bahanach Kroy Loksiv Rak Pshara Lechut Mishpat Shel Shalom Mishpat Shel Tztaka. What's happening here is that when the Torah in two psukim combines Mishpat together with either Tztaka or with Shalom, then what it's saying, right, let's go to the psukim, it says U mishpat shalom. So what kind of mishpat is the pasuk referring to when it says U mishpat shalom? Or in David HaMelech it says mishpat staka. It's referring to pshara. So the pasuk basically exhausts itself in one category of mishpat. In these two psukim, according to Rav Yishuv ben Karcha, the Torah made a breakthrough and said that there's such an entity of mishpat which is called mishpat shel Staka, or mishpat shel shalom, meaning that pshara is a new category of mishpat, and that's the subject of these two psukim. That, says the Gvuras Yitzchak, is antithetical to hekesh. Why? Because Hekesh means when you have two psukim, referring to two entities, and they're contiguous one near the other, and therefore we have to equate A to B. But now we're saying that according to Rabbi Shu ben Karcha, the subject of these psukim is just pshara. That's what it is. He's describing an entity of pshara. Ulam, however, lamand of makish pshara ledin, bal karcha, we have no choice. The sova de tartik siv. You can't have a hekesh unless you have two different enterprises, two different entities, and you want to equate them. Bahakra. So then what it means is, bein mishpat shel din, ubein pshara. In other words, there are two different categories. So Rashi says the following. Makshinan pshara ledin, Rashi quotes the pasuk in Shmuel, "Dichsiv mishpat utzdaka." You'll ask, why does Rashi quote the pasuk in Shmuel and not the pasuk in Zechariah? Lo hevi kra de mishpat shalom, the pasuk of Zechariah. Nira, to sphere le Rashi, to bahach kra, that the possibility exists that with regard to the pasuk by David HaMelech, "Ksiv rak davar echad." I'm sorry. Let me go back again. Devahakra, meaning the pasuk in Zechariah, ksiv rak dover echad, because there's no vav. Well, I'll get back to the vav in a minute. It says mishpat shalom. And what does mishpat shalom means? Mishpat shalom means we're talking about pshara. So the phrase mishpat shalom refers to pshara. So the subject of this pasuk is pshara. That's not going to help Rashi, because Rashi's looking for hekesh between pshara and mishpat. However, if you take a look at the pasuk in David HaMelech, there it says mishpat utzdaka, which means that we have two entities here. We have mishpat and we have tzdaka. You got that, Rabosai? It says mishpat utzdaka. That's called a vav hamachalik, which means that we separate between the two. Vagemara amra shetartik siv. The Torah, the Gemara itself is trying to assume that both Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim postulate a hekesh between two entities. One is called mishpat or din, the other is called pshara. If that be the case, there's a hekesh between pshara and mishpat. Lachach hevi Rashi kra degavi David, vahi David also mishpat utzdaka. This sphirale, because Rashi holds that when the Gemara has this hekesh between pshara and mishpat, the Hekesh is written in this Vav that's coming to connect between two different distinct entities, Mishpat and Tzedaka. The Sfirle, the Tarti Ichlal Bahach Kra, Mishpat and Tzedaka. There are two categories of judgment that are referred to, that are alluded to in this pasuk. One is a category called Mishpat, the other is a category of Tzedaka. Now the punchline is coming in the next line, but before I give you the punchline, let's just understand the mechanics. What he's suggesting is, and this would answer up Tosfos' kasha, that what Rashi understood was that at least in the case of the pasuk in Shmuel, there's a possibility of defining, categorizing Mishpat and Pshar as two separate entities. Hence, we could produce a Hekesh because the Vav equates the two. And Rabbi Meir is going to derive from that Hekesh that you need three judges for a Pshar, just like you need three judges for a Din. This is not going to undermine Rabbi Shu ben Karcha, because Rabbi Shu ben Karcha understood that when it says Mishpat Utzdaka, the Vav of Utzdaka is not coming as a Vav HaMachalik, meaning to separate between two entities, Mishpat Utzdaka, but rather a Vav HaMachaber. It means that Mishpat Utzdaka is one entity. And the Torah is really addressing Mishpat Utzdaka and advocating in favor of Pshara. So again, whereas Rabbi Yeshua ben Karch understood that this pasuk in David HaMelech has only one subject, one theme, and that's Pshara, the Chachamim understood that there are two themes over here. There's Mishpat, as a Machalik, Tzedaka. And both are on the same level. The Torah is not advocating here, David is not advocating in favor of Pshara. He's saying you have two options. That's called a Rishus or a Heter. You can do Pshara if you like, you can do Din if you like, they're all Shavu B'Shavu, they're all equal. Now, if they're written in the same pasuk, two different entities, that's how the Chachom of Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha understood this pasuk, now we can establish a hekesh between the two, hence we can derive the number of judges that are necessary for Pshara. But here's the punchline. Ratzal Lomar, what is the pasuk telling me if you learn the Vav as a Vav HaMachalek according to the Chachomim of Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha, namely, that there are two entities indicated in this pasuk? So was David confused over here? Do you follow the confusion? Because if you hold it's all one entity, so David advocated in favor of Pshara. Because the Vav means Mishpat Utztaka, which means one entity called Mishpat Sheyeshpat Staka. Well, that's what David HaMelech was recommending. Hence, I derive Rav Shub Ben Karcha's conclusion that Mitzvah Livtzah. But if on the other hand, I'm going to Chachamim, and the Vav is separating between two entities, so it comes out that David HaMelech is an androgynous here. You know, he's like both male and female at the same time. I mean, what is he advocating? So here's the punchline. What's a Lomar? The Lefamim Asa David Stako, Lefamim Asa Mishpat. That David would do one of two things. Sometimes he would advocate in favor of Mishpat, and sometimes he would advocate in favor of Din. I'm sorry, in favor of Pshara. Did he have a preference?
No,
he had no preference. They're all equal in the eyes of David HaMelech. So there are two entities, and sometimes, let's say on a Monday he did Mishpat, on a Thursday he did Pshara. I guess it would depend upon, you know, whether he saw that the litigants were open to the suggestion. You know, if they came in adamantly and they said, we're here for Din, then the David's not going to mess with these buryonim, you know, these bullies. But if they came in with a certain flexibility and they said, please judge that case, then maybe David would present to them an alternative. But it wasn't that he was advocating that there's a mitzvah. That's the way the Chachom understood the pasuk. So there are two entities, two forms or modes of judgment, and David HaMelech was involved in both. You know, sometimes he would do this way, sometimes that way. If it came in the Tarati Ichlubach Kra, is now we understand the Gemara about Hekesh. There's a Hekesh now between Staku and Mishpat, which is created by the fact that these two words are written contiguously with a Vav HaMachaber in the middle. Vinireh, on the top of the left column, the E Nema the Tarte Ichlal Bahakra. If you would have said that both are included in this pasuk, Bemis Maidachsiv Mishpat Lokai Al Psharu Psharu Lo Ikri Mishpat. There are two different entities. One is called Mishpat. One is called Pshara. Don't integrate them into one entity, because then you're on the turf of Rabbi Yeshua Ben Karcha, who says that David HaMelech advocated in favor of one entity, one mode of judgment, which was an integration of both, namely Pshara, and that's called Mishpat or Din Sheyeshba Yeshbat Staka. Just give me one more minute. Ulafia Mavur Nirali Ashiv Kushas Atosus. Now we have an answer to Tosus' question. Because again, Tosus is very destructive, but he's not constructive. He rips down Rashi, but he never comes up with a better answer to the question of where is this Hekesh? Sphere Leila Rashi the Daskar Rabbi Yeshua Ben Karcha the Sovish of Shari Ikri Mishpat. In other words, Pshara is a subcategory of Mishpat. It's not a new entity unto itself. Uksiv, and the pasuk says Mishpat Shalom Shiftu B'Sharechem. Oh, in the case of David HaMelech, it says Vayi David Oseh Mishpat Utztaka. It's all referring to one entity. Hare. So what do we derive from these psukim? That the pasuk is advocating in favor of this mode of judgment, namely a Mishpat Sheyeshpat Shalom, Mishpat Sheyeshpat Staka. And therefore, Rabbi Yeshua Ben Karcha comes to the conclusion that Mitzvah Livtzah. Achein, however, I'm skipping the brackets, L'man D'Sovah D'Makshinam Shara L'Mishpat. He understands that in these psukim, there are two different entities. One is Mishpat, and Mishpat is only Mishpat. Pshar is a different entity. Now, David HaMelech sometimes did it this way, sometimes did it that way. So Rashi says, from this we could derive a Hekesh. They're all equal, there's no Mitzvah. And yet, there's a Hekesh between the two, because they're both written together in the Pasuk. Hence, if you require three judges for a Mishpat, likewise, three judges for a Pshara. If you hold, and this is going to be Rabbi Yeshua Ben Karcha Shita, that Pshara itself is a subcategory of Din, v'chashiv Din Shalom or Din Staka, then we say Yesh Mitzvah, because that's what the Pasuk is advocating. There aren't two entities here, there's only one entity, which is Din of Shalom or Din of Staka. Ach l'man d'yomid d'pshara lo mikri Din. If you're going to hold it that two separate entities in the Pasuk, then there's no indication here in the Pasuk that either David HaMelech or Zechariah was advocating in favor of one or the other. He was offering two opportunities. Sherry?
No, I was just going to basically know where it's heading here. Namely, if they are two entities, then you can't necessarily say that the same number of judges are required.
Well, yes, no, that we can do because of the Hekesh. You know, that's exactly what Hekesh is all about. They call it Targum. Let's say we were writing an essay, the title of which was Hekesh. the first rule of Hekesh would be that if you see two entities which are discrete and separate and they're written continuously in one pasuk, we derive conclusions one from the other.
Conclusions, but why dafka the number of judges?
Because the precondition of judgment is a bezd. In other words, we're not talking about something that's outside of bezd. And again, if you talk about pshara and you hold the two separate entities, then maybe pshara just obviates and circumvents the whole need of bezd. I don't know. That has to be taken under advisement. But if you're telling me that the Torah now took pshara, which is a separate entity, it's not mishpat, but equated it by putting the two words together, mishpat staka, mishpat shalom, then what the Torah is telling you is that you need a bezdin for both. Well, ask yourself the following question: what bezdin do you need for mishpat? And Rabbi Meir says for mishpat you need a bezdin of three. The Chachamim hold no, even one judge is enough, because ein erev parshas ksivka. And that's the sugya. But the beauty of this piece in the Gvuras Yitzchak, I would have offered him a prize just for this piece alone. Again, the book itself is hundreds of pages long. I don't have access to the book, but I have access to HebrewBooks.com. And that's how I was able to print this out. Are you familiar with HebrewBooks.org? I mean, it's an amazing contribution to Torah literature. You know, I had a whole discussion about the internet. Are we in favor of the internet or opposed to the internet? Well, now we're in favor of the internet, because if not for the internet, I couldn't have said the Shia today. Okay then. So now we'll go back to Daf Zayin, where we were holding on Yom Chamishi. And I would love you to either hold on to these pages, or maybe we'll put them in a pile here if you're afraid you might lose them. Because I think these pages, as we go through them, will serve a double function. It will be, number one, a chazar on what we did, which I think is critical. And number two, it'll be a way of taking this dry Gemara that so many drushes and agaditas, and some of them seem to repeat themselves over and over again, and breathe a little bit of life into that. So that's what I'm going to do. Now, I would take a vote here whether you like it or not, but I'm not going to vote because I might lose the vote, and therefore I have to learn these pages. Whether I just don't have a choice. My nefesh needs them very bad. So we're now on Daf Zayin Amid Beis, and we are up to Rav Ashi. So let's see if we can find the place. Omar Rav Ashi, let's see. Gee, it's mamish smack in the middle of the page. How do I... I'll tell you the first word in the line, if that at all helps anybody, is titein lecha. You see, if you look at the larger, wider lines, and you go with your finger, your eye down the right column, the first word in the line, you'll stop at the word titein lecha. Those two words.
Trefa?
I don't see trefa here. Hopefully it's kosher. What do you mean? Where's trefa? I didn't see that. Titein. You see a word titein?
It's about 16 lines down from the wide
line. 16 lines down, Usher says, from the wide line. Yeah? And towards the end of that line, Omar Avashi. That's where we held, that's where we stopped on Yom Chamishi. Okay then?
Yeah.
Don, somehow. Do you have the Hebrew page or only the English page?
Well, I didn't copy the...
Ah, so you're in trouble, because if I tell you 16 lines down, you have no clue where that is. You
know? Well, it's got to be... that's why I found the Rav Ashi, but it was referring to Trefa, which I think is further up. I think it's further up.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
All right. Omer Rav Ashi. Ubimakom sheyesh talmidei chachamim. Okay, so let's just review. The last thing that we learned before this Rav Ashi was Reish Lakish. And Reish Lakish says that if you mess up with Dayanim and you turn out to set up a Dayan who's what's called Eino Hagun, we discussed last week what that means, that he doesn't know enough about Jewish law to issue a horah, you know, a verdict, or it may be that his moral ethical standard is less than sterling. So the Gemara of Reish Lakish compares that, based on a pasuk in Sefer Dvarim, to Avodah Zarah. Which means that, if you recall, we had a pasuk, Hashem Nitzav Adas Kel, that God is with us, the Shechina is there during judgment. And if the judgment is made in a way that's antithetical to justice, because the dayan he's not the one that you want to appoint. He's the last person in the world that you want to appoint as your judge. Maybe he bought his way in, but in any event, then that's like banishing the Almighty. And banishing the Almighty is the same as building, as planting a tree which is dedicated for the worship of Avodah Zarah. Now Rav Ashi is going to flip it around in the other side, in the positive direction. What happens if we're not in the presence of a Dayan Sheino Hagun, but rather we're in the presence of a Talmud Chacham, who's dedicated to justice, to knowledge of Torah? And then he says, Kilu Nito Eitzel Mizbeach, meaning the Talmud Chacham is considered to be in close proximity to the Mizbeach, which is the opposite of an Asherah. The opposite of Avodah Zarah, the purpose of the Mizbeach is Avodah, to serve God. Shenemar, where does Rav Ashi see any connection between a Talmud Chacham and Mizbeach? Shenemar lo sita, I'm reading the whole pasuk here, lo sita lecha asherah kol eitz, eitzel Mizbach Hashem Elokecha. The Mizbach is called the Mizbach of Hashem Elokecha, and we banish any relationship, any close proximity to an Asherah, to Avodah Zarah. And the Talmud Chacham is considered like the Mizbeach. Why is the Talmud Chacham considered like the Mizbeach? So the Marsha explains, because the Gemara says in many places in Shas that the Talmud Chacham protects the Dor, he protects the generation. He brings about a kapara, an atonement, which protects the generation. And that means that he's like the Mizbeach, because what's the purpose of the Mizbeach? Again, protection, meaning kapara, to atone for our sins. So to the same extent that a Mizbeach atones for our sins, so too the Talmud Chacham will create a communal atonement for our sins. Hence, he's like the Mizbeach. So if you're close to the Talmud Chacham, you're like close to the Mizbeach. Now, getting back to the negative side, which was Reish Lakish's address, that namely a Dayan who's Eino Hagun, he doesn't deserve to serve, and because he perverts justice. He says, "I'll give you a further combination or connection to Avodah Zarah." Ksiv, the pasuk says, "Lo sasun iti Elohei Chesed Elohei Zahav." I mean, check me out on this. If I'm not mistaken, that's in the Aseret Sadiros, in Parashas Yisro. Double check me on that. Don't believe me for a minute. But it says, don't create for me gods of silver and gods of gold. So this doesn't make any sense, because an idol could be made of many different materials. It doesn't have to be made of neither gold nor silver. It could be made of pottery. It could be made of wood. And I guess, Don, you probably fill me in better on this in terms of the archaeologists, but if I remember from my visit to the Israel Museum, where they show you some ancient Canaanite idols and so forth and so on, they weren't always made. I think
stones.
Stone and also pottery, and I saw some that were made of copper, aluminum kind of substance. So why is the Torah focusing on Elohei Chesef, Elohei Zod? And the Gemara asks rhetorically, Elohei Chesed, Elohei Zav, Hu Delo Avdi? We shouldn't worship idols that are created by out of silver and gold. But Ha'adayet Shari, are you allowed to create an idol that's made out of wood? That's impossible. Rav Ashi says, Eloha Haba Bishvil Kesef, Eloha Haba Bishvil Zav. That is a form of Avodah Zarah that comes through paying, through buying. You buy your way into a position. You're not Roy, you're not Hogan, you don't deserve to be appointed as a judge, and yet you paid enough money and you got you hooked the position. You paid enough kesef or enough zav, and therefore you got the position. Once again, we see that the Torah here is equating the case of a Dayan who was not worthy of being appointed with the parsha of Elohei Kesev Elohei Zov, which means Avodah Zarah. Now all this is based on one premise, that the word Elohim in the Torah, when it doesn't refer to God, usually refers to a dayan, it refers to a judge. And there's an entire sugya in Masechta Brachos that proves that the word Elohim, I'm sorry, in Masechta Shabbos, that the word Elohim indicates not only HaKadosh Baruch, but also indicates a judge. And that's because of the special relationship between the judgment of a good judge and the Shekhinah and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if we set up a Dayan Sheino Hagun, then we're like banishing God, as we said before. He's not an Elohim. Elohim means he's a Dayan that reaches the standard of bringing God down. And instead, he banishes God's presence. And that's considered like setting up an Asherah, an Avodah Zarah tree, right next to the Mizbeach. Now, by the way, where is the source that Elohim refers to a Dayan? And that's the Parsha Mishpatim that we mentioned at the very beginning of our Limud here in Sanhedrin, V'nikrav Balabayis El Elohim, that the litigant will come close to Elohim, which means the judge. Rav ki avi osi lebeidina. Now, if I would ask you the following question, you're going to have to trust me on this. Rav is the greatest Amora that we ever had. Trust me on that. What would you say would be Rav's attitude when he sat down in judgment in a Beis Din? Would he be scared? Would he be afraid of all the admonitions and all the punishments that we've indicated? Or would he have a sense of, shall I say, self-security? He would be calm about it. What would have been your knee-jerk response? I mean, I know, so I'm asking for the wrong answer, which is the right answer in this case. He would be calm. Rav is the greatest of all. I mean, again, you could write a book about Rav. He was just beyond human comprehension. But Kiavios the Beit Dina, we went, walked into the court. Omar Hoch, he said to himself, Biraus Nafshe L'Ktola Nafik. I said Biraus. Biraus means the will, like in Be'an Arachitz, right? Birausa means will. Nafshe, my own will. L'Ktola Nafik, I'm going to death. I'm bringing myself through no one's compelling me into my own death. And not only that, Utzvi Besa, less who the of it. I'm ignoring my family in order to play this role as a judge. V'reikon lebeisei oil. Normally, if you go out of your family in order to serve in a certain capacity, what do you bring back to your family? No. Normally, I'm saying, Don, have you ever gone to, let's say, a firm of, let's say, accountants or something along that line, and when you come home, you came back with what?
Money.
With money, because you got a salary. Says Rav, not only have I ignored my family, but Reikon, empty, lebeisei oil, I go back up to my house and I got nothing to show for it. By the way, this indicates, which is a discussion unto itself, that Dayanim are not to be paid a salary. Which is a pella. If you know anything about contemporary life here in the state of Israel, every Talmud Chacham almost in this country is trying to get a position as a dayan, because dayanacy is paid by the government. It's a government appointee, because the government recognizes Jewish, what's it called, batei din and rabbaniim, for certain areas of jurisdiction. Very restricted, but for certain areas of judgment. So everybody's trying to get that, I don't know, I heard a rumor it's 35,000 shekel a month, I don't know what it is, but you're talking about poor people who really need a living. And the line to get a job is like from here till out the window. But Rav says, I come back empty-handed. I'm not getting 35,000 shekel a month. So the answer is, the poskim say there's something called Tzchar Batola. So in order to get Dayanus, you'd probably have to spend more time than getting a PhD from Harvard. Because I know my Mechudin has a program to prepare people for Dayanus, and it's a 10-year program. And he says it's very rare that anyone finishes within 10 years. The average is probably closer to 15 years. Just to learn monetary law. And you're talking about a group of geniuses, 150 Avreichim learning. So you can imagine that there's something called Schar Batola. Schar Batola means, what had I gone into a different field, what would I have been paid? Okay, so let's say in my case, I have a master's in philosophy, you know, from the new school. Okay, so I could have been a professor of philosophy. Had it gone on for a PhD, I had the chairman of the political, I took a minor in political science, and the chairman of that department, he's not alive anymore, his name was Jacob Landinsky, who's been quoted on the Supreme Court numerous times, but he's gone. Anyway, he very much wanted me to go for a PhD. So I was thinking to myself, had I gone for, at the end I had to deal with my father. I said, Dad, I got my master's degree, I don't have to go on to the PhD, I'm going back to the basement. So my father had an agreement and he never pressed me on that. That was the agreement. I got my master's and that's it. But I was thinking to myself, had I gone on for a PhD, then my schar batola would have been a lot more. But I don't know, what does a PhD get paid in university? Probably bupkis. You don't get much, do you? Yeah, how much do they pay? $250,000 a year?
Depends on the university.
Yeah. Right?
Depends how far to the left you are.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
In Australia, it's about $350,000 as a starting position.
Where?
For a professor.
In Australia.
Wow.
Australia. Australian dollars.
Australian dollars.
That's less worth less.
Yeah, but it's still about 50 times what I get paid here. So anyway, schar batola is for me is just a non-entity, you know. Saying, but anyway, I didn't go for my PhD, so my schar batola is not that high. You know, a philosopher with a master's degree probably teaches in high school or something. Well, high school also, you know, they have a lot of benefits. My sister just retired from the public school system. She has benefits that are going to take her for the next 2 centuries. Anyway. So why is Rav nervous? He says to himself, look, I'm leaving my family behind, I'm going into the court, I'm judging, it's a very encompassing self-flagellation, self-acceptance, and I'm not bringing home any sort of salary, no bread on the table, and on top of that, I'm putting my life in danger. And he says, Halavai, he says, what I pray to God for, Halavai, Shetehei Bia Ki Yitzia, that just like I walked into the court without a sin, and therefore I have a right to claim life, my exit from the court should also be when I'm alive and walking on 2 feet. So it's unbelievable. Rav is afraid. He sees like death in front of his eyes when he goes into judgment. I mean, this is Rav who should have had absolute confidence in himself. Why does he think he's going to suffer punishment if he deviates from the law? I mean, he knows the law inside out. And the answer is because it's absolutely frightening for a human being to come up with a decision in which Almighty God in the Shechina Shorah and it's by the Kim Nitzav Adas Kel, it's so challenging that even Rav feels challenged. Ki Avichazi, when Rav would see Ambua Abasre, he saw a group of people. This whole Agadah is about the humility of Rav. Again, Rav is the greatest, but look, he saw behind him an entire entourage of people who are walking behind him. Amar, and he declared about himself, a pasuk in Iyov, Im yalal ha-shamayim si'o, kiglolo lenetzach yoved, that if a person is uplifted to the sky, meaning people think he's so great that they're walking behind him, you know, giving him an entourage, so for at the end, yushpal, he'll go down, 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 and the pasuk actually compares him to golol. Golol means, you know, what the animal leaves behind here. If you don't know what I mean, I'll take you for a walk here, a few feet from here. You'll see. They don't have the strict rules that they have in America about cleaning up after this. But anyway, look at the humility of Rav. Rav says that, you know what? I'm going to be punished, so to speak, because I'm getting all this honor and glory. People are walking behind me. And I don't deserve it. This is the humility of Rav. Rav goes into a court and he's afraid of death because he won't be able to judge properly. And just reminiscing, when I spent 5 summers in Boston to learn with Rav Soloveitchik, so on Motzi Shabbos, we would walk him home from Maimonides to his house. It was quite a long walk. And Rav Soloveitchik did not want to go in a car because he held Shabbos continued till next Shabbos. I don't know. Anyway, whatever it is. So we were walking behind Rav Soloveitchik and people would fire questions at Rav. Man, most of them just rolled off him. You know, he wasn't interested. All of a sudden, somebody asked him a question and like it caught his fancy. He would stop dead in his tracks. And boom, like dominoes, one Talmud went into the other. You know, and one time he did this in the middle of Calm Avenue. So this is like a major intersection. You know? But anyway, everyone's walking behind Rav. Let's just read 2 more lines and then I'll let you go. Marzutra Chasida. Marzutra was called a chassid. He was very pious. According to the Sefer Tanoim V'Yuchsin, he was a special Marzucha. This is not the classic Marzucha. There are two Chacham with the name Marzucha. This one was called Marzucha Chasido because he was known for his piety. Kihavi Makatfile. It's unbelievable. The Talmidim would carry him on their shoulders. Bishabsa de Regila, you may remember, and I think those who are with me from Pesach, and we learned about this, that on the Regel, the Chacham is required to give a public drasha in which he learns and teaches the laws of the Regel. And specifically on the Regel, when the entire community had to hear what he had to say, they used to carry him on their shoulders in order to make sure that he would get there smoothly and quickly, because there was an entourage of people, and not only that, he was getting older, and now he's worried about Gaiva. Maybe it's going to go to his head. I mean, after all, you know, the people are raising him up on their shoulders. Omar Hachi used to say to himself the following, a pasuk in Mishle, Ki lo li olam chosen, v'im nezer lidar v'adar. I'll read to you the Hebrew translation. He says the following, Im hanach achshav chazak. Now he says, Incha yechazak, you seem very strong, because people, you know, they adore you and they almost worship you. Al tismoch, don't rely on it. Chosen means to when you rely on something as being shtak, as being strong. Al choska shekain eno kayim liolam. It's passing. You know, you get COVID, you know, today you're prime minister, you don't know what's going to be tomorrow, right? If sometimes you merit wearing the crown, dalacha, you should know, that's Nezer is called a keser, that shalom nishar yol yishar etzchol adori doros. Don't think that it's liolam. Ki lo liolam. And even if you have the Nezer, it's not lidar vidar. It might be for one period of time, but you don't know what's going to be tomorrow. So I'm both saying, we'll make a note here that we got up to Darish Bar Kappar. If you can make a note, it saves me the hassle of trying to count numbers and then figure out where it is. And tomorrow, Bli Neder, if you can take these pages and have them, once again, it would do me a big toiva that I don't have to worry about, you know, where we photocopied the pages and where we're up to. So we're on page Ayin Zion in this thing. So we're going to try to make a shiluv here of moving on in the Agadah to begin doing a chazor and trying to get a deeper meaning, understanding of the Agadah. So as you pack up your bags, I'm going to test you. Pshara and Din, are they two separate entities or one separate entity? And so Machlokas Tanoim, according to Rav Yishuv Ben Kocha, they're one entity. And it's what David Mel calls a Mishpat of Tzedakah, what Zechariah calls a Mishpat of Shalom. It's one entity. And that's Rav Yishuv Ben Kocha, that therefore it's a mitzvah lasis for Shalom. On the other hand, the Chachamim say they're two separate entities with a hekesh between them, but they're on the same level. Nothing is recommended here. There are two ways you can go, and they're both. Yes, so the Gemara is going to get to that a little bit later on. You know, we'll have to get into that. But
one idea based in itself. Which is
the story about the angels?
I just want to say this, Joseph. According to Rabbi Shmuel ben Korcha, my gut response to you is that you don't even need a hekesh for that. Why? Because basically, there are two ways of doing mishpat according to Rabbi Shmuel ben Korcha. The Torah advocates doing the mishpat of tzedaka, which is pshara. So if mishpat we know requires three judges, then pshara as mishpat would also require three judges. I don't even need a hekesh. We've sort of climbed, you know, one rung higher on the ladder. We're even greater than a hekesh. Hekesh means you have two separate entities, but here we're talking about mishpat as one entity. Yeah, done. What do you want to say?
I'm trying to remember. There's a story about one of the kings, you know, when the monarchy was split.